brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Suds, suds, suds. It's time for more suds.
Welcome, 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 everyone.
I don't think anybody's greeted Dave with at least three welcomes ever.
No. This is to our audience. This isn't to him.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It wasn't directed towards Dave. That's good.
Aw.
It's all right. I feel honey. Welcome. I welcome myself.
Okay.
Hey, Dave. Welcome. Hey,
thanks, everyone. Dave. Thank you for joining. This is another Sud segment where we drink beer and we talk about it. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Well,
that's what it said on the pamphlet for me.
Well, maybe it is, but we've won awards doing it. So, you know, hey.
Meh.
Here we go.
Whatever. I am one of your hosts, good old gal Juliana. And with me today at the table is good old boy Kendall.
I am so happy to be here.
Yay. Good old boy Mike.
Despite the repeated lawsuits, I am still here.
Look at that enthusiasm,
yes,
folks.
Thank you.
And good old boy Dave.
Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast.
I love that movie so much. But anyways, wow. Well, at the end of each season of Sips, Suds, and Smokes, we do a best of episode where each host will talk about some of their favorite products that were covered on the show over the past year. Over time, our tastes and preferences change, right? Because we grow up a little.
I'm growing right now. I won't say where
or which direction. Horizontally or vertically.
You just stop that right there.
I can't. It's nature.
I thought it was nurture.
Well, our tastes and our preference change, and also new breweries and new beers pop up like almost daily.
Yes.
Not to mention that there are hot new trends constantly coming and going.
Right? I had a double goza.
Pretty much.
Imperial Seltzer. Kettle sour.
Yes.
With lactose.
I actually heard somebody say they were going to do a lactose saison.
What?
And I, yeah.
Caperton just ran through a wall.
Yeah. It's just, this is so wrong on so many levels.
I can already hear printing t-shirts and starting the protest.
Yeah. Oh. Making up some signs right now. Right.
Wow. Well, I thought that it would be cool to look back at two or three of our top picks from a few years ago. Can you believe it that we've been on the air for that long?
I can't believe we're on the air right now.
So we're going to see
most of our audience.
So we're going to see how we like them now. And then also try some newer things from those breweries. So today we're going to go back and revisit three of our favorite IPAs from 2013.
Whether we want to admit it or not, we all drank Blue Moon at one point.
Good old boy Kendall, would you please give us the lineup for today?
The beers we'll be tasting and discussing today are from Six Point Brewery, the Classic Resin IIPA, a 9.1% beer that was one of the best of 2013. We also have their Spritzer Bomb IPA coming in at 8%. Next up, we have Blackstone Brewery's Best of 13 beer, the Atom Bomb IPA, a 7.2% IPA, along with their newer Little Jack Low-Cal IPA with a low 4.1% ABV. Also, one of our 2013 best ofs was the classic from Cigar City, Hi-Li, at 7.5%, a very well-known IPA. And also their Taco Bago Red IPA at 7.2% ABV.
Like a bag of tacos? That's cool. Dude, I would drink that.
Thank you, Kendall. That was nice. Very nice. All right, good old boy Dave.
What?
Give us those suds ratings.
Oh, this is reading. Okay. We'll be discussing and rating these beers with these Suds ratings plus our signature belching sounds. Here are those ratings now. Number one, that sucks. Give me anything but a good old boy mic.
Are you using your big radio voice?
This is the biggest voice I've got, fella. Two, was that a belch? It's puny. Three, what a relief. Four, a good old boy Mike should really not make any sound. Oh, sorry. I misread that. And number five, listen to that hang time. Give me another. Good old boy Dave.
Note to self, keep good old boy Dave away from the ratings. Okay, thanks. Let's get to those beers. We're going to talk about each one, give our notes and ratings, and then also talk about other things.
You know, stuff.
So we're starting with resin?
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to start with 6 Point. 6 Point was founded in 2014. Wow. That's crazy. And they were homebrewers initially, and then the microbrewery is located in a 7,000 square foot factory in Red Hook. Then in November of 2018, 6 Point was acquired by Artisanal Brewing Ventures, which already owns Southern Tier and Victory Brewing Companies. So there's that.
If you don't know, 6 Point is based out of Brooklyn, New York, and this is one of their perennial. There's high availability of this. There's going to be a new beer that's going to be introduced here in 2014 as well that is going to be able to elevate resin itself. You know, some of the flavor.
So is this beer called
I think that was 14 in that clip.
We've come a long way, folks.
Not really.
So everyone, there's a new Sips Huds and Smokes drinking game. Every time good old boy Mike says, turn off the show.
It's time to head over to that quilting show.
So, okay, let's really, talk about resin.
Really interesting.
Oh, turn it off.
The hop profile on this is not quite what I remembered it being. The earthiness quality of this particular hop profile, not quite what we think of in many IPAs, you know, today.
This is definitely old school.
Yeah, so IPA. Old school. Yeah. I mean, just a solid bitterness, those caramelly malts that just... You get that sweetness. It's a lot sweeter, you get a balance. I honestly can't remember. It's been so long since I had resin, but it seems about like resin to me.
Yeah.
And resin is a really good name for this beer.
Oh, it's so
super sticky.
Sticky yeah. and piney, and it's beautiful and old school.
What do you think, JB?
You know, I remember having to travel up to Kentucky back in the day to get this and thinking, oh my gosh, this is such a great IPA. And this is so unlike anything that we've had. You know, of course, everything was bland before. I hate to say that. And this was just like a burst, right, of dank forest loveliness.
Yeah. They don't publish their hop profile that I remember. I mean, if you guys had to guess, I mean, this is not a... of a lot of the beers I think we're going to have today, this is definitely not a Citra, Mosaic, Galaxy Bomb. This is, there's like a Motuka or
Simcoe or something.
I would guess some Simcoe, some maybe some even CTZ.
I'm going to go with Simcoe. I think that's what's...
Centennial.
Yeah, it's really, it almost is tasting like they were going toe-to-toe with the West Coast style, you know.
I think that's IPA. Absolutely what they were doing in 2013, yeah. You know.
Because at the time, Sierra Nevada and Lagunitas were really pumping out all these huge, you know, sticky, sweet, you know, style West Coast IPAs. And I think this was a bit of their, we can deal with those same hops, you know, as well.
We'll burn your palate up just like those guys do.
Yeah.
It does not say it all, even on the new packaging. It's still in the same can,
yeah,
you know, the same size, which is great. And the logo has just been updated slightly. 9.1% ABV, 103 IBUs. The only thing that is different now compared to what it was years ago is that you've got the Statue of Liberty on the barcode, which I thought was kind of sweet.
That's interesting.
And then when it says that it's formulated and brewed by Six Point Brewery, it's now Brooklyn, New York, Parkersburg, PA, and Downingtown, PA.
Oh. So they're making it in multiple locations now.
Right. So there's been expansion, if you will.
Oh, you found that list. I was right on one of them, but Chinook and Centennial.
Oh, yeah. Chinook. Okay. Now that makes sense. Well,
yeah. So that's why I said the CTZ, because you get a lot of similarity there. And Simcoe has also got some of that old school danky resininess.
Yeah. And that kind of that bite to it. Yeah. Yeah. Man. It's interesting. And, you know, the thing about the can, too, is like, I wonder how many seltzer buyers are getting thrown off by these cans,
because they've been doing because the skinny same forever. Profile of skinny cans.
But
it's
I hope they get confused and finally move on to something decent with flavor.
But I think it's safe to say that this is held up
well,
and it's still really yummy. And you know, in a world now where we have so much lactose in everything, it's nice to come home to this.
Really good.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
We are rating this a 4.
Tiffany, these aren't seltzers. You ruined my bachelorette party.
Still super solid.
Yeah. You know? And the cool thing is I've seen Chinook starting to pop up again.
Yeah.
I think it's a flavor people are looking for again. We've had enough sweet and juicy.
People are cycling back to some of the older stuff. It's very good.
I don't recall ever having this on tap, or not often anyway.
No, and
you got to go to Red Hook, buddy.
Yeah, I guess you have to go up north. I have been to Red Hook
a lot, and I don't even remember resin, you know, being available on tap in the city, you know, really that much. I mean, there's a bunch of other six-point beers.
Well, it does well in a can. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising, glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing, we've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Welcome back, everyone. So today's episode is a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new.
Because that's Mike and Dave.
Wow.
Let me pick up my fifth gen.
Wow.
So
what we're doing today, ladies and gents, if you're just tuning in, is taking some beers that we rated highly from the past, seeing how they are now, a few years later, and then also comparing some other beers from that brewery that have come out recently. So we've been talking about Six Point from Brooklyn, New York. We just finished the resin, and now we're going to get into the Spritzer Bomb.
I have sensitive nipples.
Spritzer Bomb is an 8% ABV beer. It features an easy drinking, which featured as easy drinking wine creation.
Okay.
Yeah. So
well, there you go.
There's that.
I believe this one is a collab they do with somebody.
This is. So Sloop, which is somebody that we have mentioned on a previous episode, and Six Point, they came together over the years to make 4 versions of a collaborative IPA, which is using their Sloop's Juice Bomb as a blueprint.
And then they add some wine grapes.
Yeah, so this Spritzer Bomb is all the juice of a serious IPA with the tingly finish of Sauvignon Blanc grapes.
Hmm.
Bombs away, as they say.
How you like them grapes, Mike? You're a wino.
I am, and it's very interesting. Some other beers I know that, you know, kind of crossover and are using
some aspect of other, you know, wine yeast or using, you know, grapes.
We talked a lot about Trillium before.
Trillium's, you know, dial-in series is, you know, probably I consider one of the few people that's done a great job of introducing full, you know, grape juice into the beer itself in a blend. And it was a fabulous experience, and they've been able to continue making a lot of those beers. This one is more along the lines of it's finishing out dry like a champagne yeast would. And that's a lot of what really kind of caught my attention was the wine-like aspect, was specifically the yeast component here. It's very light on the tongue. It's very approachable. This is one of those things that you'd probably sit down and go, how many of these have I had? You've had 14. Oh, okay.
Not good with an 8% beer.
No, probably not.
I think you could serve this in like those little wine flutes, like at a party. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would just think they were having some kind of like, you know, champagne-y wine kind of little thing.
Yeah.
Yep. I think you get away with that. Yeah, it's good, and it shows you the change in people's palates for IPAs.
This is not a hot bomb. This is not resin at all. This is not even remotely close to, you know, the opening beer that we talked about with resin. This is very soft, very approachable. It's very light and airy on the tongue.
Juicy and citrusy, and just it's still an 8% IPA, but it's the completely other end of the spectrum.
It's a lot more balanced.
Julie, as the only other girl here other than Mike, how do you like this beer? And would you serve it to your girlfriends?
Okay. A, you're really comparing me to Mike.
Well, I'm just saying you're both girls.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes, I would. I like what they've done here. You know, resin was its own animal, right? And it's beasty, and it's full, and it's in your face, and it's just this hot bomb. I love what the Spritzer Bomb is on so many levels. Like, A, it's modern. Mm-mm. It really is. It can even, like, go toe-to-toe with some of these New England IPAs that's come out. I mean, is it full-fledged New England IPA? No. But it's there. It can be in the conversation.
But what does that even mean anymore?
Well, and true. I mean, honestly,
I think, yeah, I think I would put that right up there in that category. It's juicy and soft and easy drinking. Yeah.
It is. It's very easy drinking. I think for somebody that is afraid of hops and the astringency that hops can bring, this is a beautiful beer.
This is a good halfway point.
Yeah, and like Mike said, it's very quaffable. Like, you could down a few of these. Refreshing and yummy. And I like that 6 Point can still be relevant, you know, so many years later.
Yeah. Great beer. Yeah. Super solid.
We're going to rate the Spritzer Bomb from 6 Point a 4.
Even if I did have to go to Kentucky to get it.
Well, you know, there's that. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the next coupling of beers, and let's go to Florida.
People are realizing that bitterness doesn't translate to good IPAs. Yeah.
And we are going to go to Tampa, and we're going to talk about Cigar City's High Life. So, Cigar City was founded in 2007, and the founder he had been in the brewing community for many years. The company has now grown to produce 170,000 barrels of beer annually with a distribution to 39 states. Since 2010, Cigar City has released their Hunapu Imperial Stout, which everyone in the beer community knows. Which has been like, and there's even a festival about it. And then as of March 2016, Cigar City has partnered with Longmont, Colorado-based Oscar Blues Brewery to form Canarchy Craft Brewery Collective, which includes Oscar Blues, Cigar City, Perrin, and the Utah Brewers Collaborative outfit that includes Wasatch and Squatters brands. So
they got big.
They might have added a few more to that, too.
I'm pretty sure they have,
I think there's one out in California and maybe one in Texas, too. So smaller ones.
Yeah. So from the little brewery that could in Florida of all states, I mean, they are now everywhere.
Tampa is like a hotbed of good breweries though. You know,
I remember the original Cigar City, spent quite a bit of time, you know, visiting that original location. I wish I could say that I actually got to know these brewers before they actually, you know, moved into making something commercially, because High Life was basically their go-to beer. In fact, I don't believe them really making any more than four beers. You know, they were right out of that, you know, brew pub kind of mentality at that point in time. You had to make a blonde, and, you know, just these very basic simple styles. Might have to
make a stout, you know, like just hit all the four corners.
And they really kind of set that aside, and they said, we're not going to do the brew pub model. We are going to make four, you know, solid beers, but they're not going to be the ones that you think we're going to make. So, you know, they made the Maduro, you know, right off the bat. They made they put High Life out there, you know, very right off the get-go. So they were definitely beers that I remember being able to get wide, you know, very wide distribution, right, even from the get-go. But great hop profile. I can't remember this hop profile either, and I'm seeing tasting through it as well. And it's definitely not that, again, it's not that Citra, you know, Mosaic Bomb, you know, or Galaxy that so many beers are really made with now. There's definitely something with a very earthy quality again to it. You know, I don't think it's Centennial, but that wouldn't be a bad guess.
I don't think that's a bad guess at all.
No, I don't think you're too far off. I'll tell you, one of the things that impressed me about these guys is the High Life is very good, but then they did the White Oak High Life.
Yes.
And nobody was doing that kind of thing, hardly.
That's true. They were one of the few brewers that were actually barrel aging anything. And because they were making some additional beers and barrel aging them, they had access into a barrel broker that they went, why don't we drop some of this High Life into, you know, some wine barrels and, you know, see, you know, what this is going to produce. And I love that White Oak line. I thought that it softened up the beer.
That was a really well done beer.
And I thought that it was a good compliment at the time.
So here's what I'm seeing for hops for High Life. Altanum Amarillo.
That makes a lot of sense. The Amarillo is the thing that I think is very predominant.
Columbus, Centennial, Cascade. That makes a ton of sense.
That is
Simcoe.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost classic. A lot of guys use this mix classic, of hops.
The C's.
That's a classic West Coast.
And then, the C's, and you throw in Simcoe and Amarillo.
Yeah.
And you've got a West Coast IPA.
Interesting that a beer that would be this popular for this long has absolutely no Galaxy, no Citra, and no Mosaic in it. That's crazy. You know
you can make a beer without Mosaic.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, people are scratching their head going, wow, how did they pull that off for the last 15 years?
Absolute classic. And it just, when it comes to just classic American IPAs in that West Coast style, you know, this is definitely top five.
The thing that's really sticking out with me is the quality of this more than anything. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a beer that I've probably had off and on, you know, over this period of time. And this tastes just as good as I remember it, even it 15 years ago.
Well, and the cool thing is, like, this is one of the ones you can get at the grocery store. Like, you can just go when you're, you know, whatever, and you can get a 12-pack, and it's not super high-priced or anything. And there's a ton of it. It's very readily available, and you can it's easy to get, you know, and it's great.
And I think they've been able to, you know, go toe-to-toe pretty well, you know, on the tap wall. And being able, you know, to put this in a lot of, you know, premise, you know, distribution. You can go to a ballpark and get a High Life. You know, you can go to a football game and get a High Life.
Or you could go to like a craft beer bar and get High Life. Like it flies in both. You're right.
Yeah.
Juliana, what are you looking up over there?
Oh, I'm just trying to remember I was looking up like old notes that I had. This is like, I remember the first time I tried this and it blew me away. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is coming from Florida of all places. Not to be mean. And just how it was
banned once again.
Of course. But it was hoppy and it was comfortable and it was easy drinking. And it's still like, I could still down a few of these today.
All of that.
It's not too much of anything.
No, it's not. It's very well balanced. And I mean, even today with all of their expansion, it's still pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the cool moments that I remember with Highlight, and actually with the White Oak version that Dave, you know, had mentioned earlier, was they actually have a Cigar City Brewing in the Tampa airport.
They do.
And I remember the first time, and this was when, you know, you could actually go down to the gate, you know, with your family and everything. And my mom and dad were with me. And I remember, you know, walking over and picking up a six pack of the White Oak and taking it with me on the plane. And mom was like, wow, you can do that? And I go, yep, mom, I'm definitely doing that. And I actually remember bringing the White Oak back for all of you to enjoy off that trip. And I just thought that was, you know, that was so cool because that beer was so difficult, you know, to find at that point. They didn't make a lot of the White Oak. And I remember how much we enjoyed having that and having it fresh, you know, right there off the plane.
And it's not just that they've got a restaurant in the airport serving beer. They have a brewery in the airport.
They have a tiny pilot system in the airport.
And they make airport-only beer that you can't even get at the tap room.
That's crazy.
It's every time I actually, before, you know, the world shut down in 2020, I was in St. Petersburg in February, and I made sure I got to the airport like an hour and a half earlier than usual so I could go sit and drink fresh beer before I got on the plane.
Before you,
I love flying out of Tampa because, that's a great place to drink beer.
But that's the thing. I mean, having... And the tap room was really, really great. I mean, I remember the Big Walkers convention and going there and just being amazed at the friendliness and just such a comfortable atmosphere.
Yeah, they're good folks.
They really, really are. But even besides that, the beer was just, it wasn't crazy over the top, but it was solid and it was good. Whether you had the Highlight or a variation of the Highlight, or whether you had the Madura Brown, and, you know.
So good.
Exactly, right? So great stuff. We are going to, we're going to rate this a 5, because it's still relevant today.
Well deserved. I mean, you're looking at four folks that don't dish that out, you know, just because it's, you know, it's okay-ish and not offensive.
I think at some point this beer will be in the same conversation as like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is like a quintessential American beer. I like to think
it already is.
Yeah. You know? It may be, yeah. But I think definitely
when I was
over
thinking
time.
Top five, I'm thinking, you know, Two Hearted, you know, Sierra Nevada Torpedo, this beer. Maybe some new school stuff like Anti-Hero or Truth, but those IPAs are all following in kind of the footsteps of what they did with Highlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go totally to a different style.
I know. Isn't this great? So another beer that we wanted to highlight, maybe a little newer than the Highlight, is the Tokobaga from Cigar City. This is their red IPA clocking in at 7.2% ABV.
With 7.2, that's a nice, comfortable spot for an IPA as well.
Yeah, it's an assertive but balanced ale that marries the pine and citrus quality of Citra hops with an assertive bitterness of Summit hops and then the malt flavors.
And it is very malty, toasty.
Yeah.
You get all of those flavors you get out of a big amber, but then it comes in with a big hot bill you get from an IPA. And there's not many red IPAs out there. Nobody even calls them that much anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, just think of a really hopped up amber ale.
I think that's pretty much what it is, like an American amber.
Yeah. And this is that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super solid, red ale IPA. Who's the West Coast, out of San Diego, that also they have a brewery in Virginia.
Stone
friend, no, friendship,
Green Flesh?
Green Flesh, that's it.
Do they still make beer?
Well, no, they do, but you can't hardly get it anywhere. They got bought out by
Had a red IPA that
then they had was to pull away.
That's really kind of good. The go-to, yeah. You know, red IPA that I always, you know, think of. And when I was tasting this today, I think the big difference between the Green Flash version and the Cigar City version is that the caramel, you know, burnt sugar element of the Green Flash is a lot more pronounced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a lot more subtle. This is probably a bit more approachable.
It's more balanced.
You get more of the pine.
Yeah.
In this one.
Ton of pine.
Yeah.
It's almost that pine, grapefruity, classic old school IPA.
Oh, yeah. Because, oh, my God. I remember when the Green Flash, it was called the Hophead Red.
That's it.
IPA that came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God, this is big.
So different and big. And
I actually like this better than that beer just because this is a lot more balanced. I like how this finishes out. I remember that beer, you know, finishing out incredibly bitter on the back end.
Yeah.
And it was so pronounced in a signature element of that beer. I loved the way that finished out, but I'd like the way that this one is finishing out even better. It's a lot more soft.
And it's soft and it's balanced and it's really approachable for great a red beer. IPA. And we're going to rate this one a 4.
You could definitely drink more of this.
Mm-hmm. It is so balanced, which is rare in some of these big hoppy malty beers. Usually one of them's out of kilter.
The bigger they get, the harder it is to keep them in balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, this is nice. And I think, again, Cigar City is still relevant even, you know, today as opposed to many years ago.
Very much so. Yeah. And I love the fact, again, the quality of both these beers was just top notch.
Spot on. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
Very cool.
Not just the destination, but baby, the whole elation riding down this lover's avenue. Slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Welcome back, everyone. Today is a little bit of memory lane meets current stuff.
Yeah, so this original episode, the episode.
Things that make you go, oh?
Yeah, it's a crutch word that I use way too often, and I'm even finding myself, I'll probably be saying it another 14 times just to, thank you, remember that moment. There were a lot of themes on that particular episode that I remember talking about with everybody. One of the main things that I remember at that particular time was there were so many hop bombs that were coming out, and everybody was chasing. I can't create something that is 110 IBUs and just blow away your palate. And it was like this huge contest. And I remember so many of those beers were chasing that ultimate moment of saying, I can stuff more hops in this beer and create a better
bunghole.
What's the size of that again, Dave?
2-inch bunghole.
Yeah, that's about what everybody was working on, shoving enough hops through something about that size to create this huge flavor bombs. You know, you had these big, huge beers like Lagunitas Maximus that were coming out. You know, you had the, you know, 120-minute, you know, IPA. You had, you know, all these super.
The more hops, the better. Yeah. How much IBUs can you cram into a beer?
It was an arms race. And you mentioned in the last segment, Green Flash. Green Flash had one called Palette Wrecker.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And it was a Palette Wrecker. Yeah.
It was a barley wine from hell, if I remember
burning.
Right. I remember setting the Palette Wrecker kind of back in the back of the cellar and going, yeah, I'm touching you for a couple of years, buddy. So, yeah, I mean, when you think about, you know, how this style of beer has evolved, do you think that it's moved to a place where you're not chasing just the ability of, you know, overpowering everything with hops? I feel like, you know, most brewers have moved to the point where there's the hop blend and profiles is a lot more finesse element to it. That's part of the evolution, I think, that's come around.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Although I feel like I've seen hints that the pendulum is about to swing back that way. I've noticed hazier beers getting bitter again. I've noticed other breweries just coming out with straight up bitter IPAs. And you got to wonder, as we've been so sweet and juicy so long, are we ready to go back to just enamel stripping bitterness?
I'm not.
I'm always going to be sweet and juicy.
But here's the thing is, you know, in 2013, 2014, everything was about that astringency, that sharpness, mm-hmm. that dank forest, you know, cat piss, forgive me for saying that, floor.
That was there.
No, but it was a thing, right?
Yeah.
And it was so much more than the basic bland lagers that we were getting that didn't have a hop profile. All of a sudden, this big, huge hop profile came about. Then we got into the sweet, and then we got into the juicy, and then we got into the lactose laden stuff, you know, where it was almost too sweet to really be even considered a beer. Now maybe we are swinging back.
But I think you're right, Mike. I think a lot of breweries learn to work with hops in a new way. There's new hop technologies out there that helps them to get the flavors rather than just the pure bitterness. And I think we saw a maturity in the industry about what hops could do.
Well, and I think that, you know, the hop production as well as the delivery of the raw ingredients has also, you know, come a long way. I mean, back 10 years ago, you know, when we did this original episode, it was all about how fast can you rush things from being harvested to utilizing them. And then you were working with things that were vacuum packed. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a matter of, you know, they were dealing with elements of exposure to oxygen would basically diminish the quality of the hops you were working with.
Sure.
There's so many different things to work with now. You have lupulin powder mm-hmm. That, you know, has really come around and been revolutionary for mm-hmm. a lot of brewers to work with. You know, you've had cryo hops, you know, that people are working with that is preserving a lot of the aromatic essence, you know, of the hops, and you're getting all of those oils and elements that you get in fresh hop beers.
And many of those new hops have less of the vegetative matter we had in the old school pellets, so you don't get any of the off flavors those might have contributed, the grassiness or other things when you're doing a big dry hop. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Dare I say it's a more refined version of what hops can be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Definitely when you look at, you know, probably what was being shoved in the pellets, you know, to work with 10 years ago, you're working with elements of the whole cone and a lot of components around that that frankly didn't actually make a contributory element to the flavor profile, you know, that you're aiming for.
Right. Right.
You know, you see this a lot of time in other things, especially in grape cultivation, you know, that I'm thinking about, where you get into, you know, orange wines that, you know, have elements of the skins and the stem and everything else, you know, around them. And it really has a very different, you know, component, flavoring component than wines where you're just crushing the fruit alone.
Sure.
And I think that that's the way that hop producers have come around. I think that after time, I think it's been several things. I think one is that the brewers have demanded more of the hop producers in terms of being able to figure out a distribution model where whatever I'm tasting in the field, I want to be able to stick that in the tank at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And they don't want to deal with all this elements of rushing and only having, I can brew this during fresh hop season, you know, in the fall, but after that, dude, it's, you know, it's anybody's guess. And I love the fact that there have been brewers that have learned to navigate that over a long period of time. I love the conversation that we just had about Highline, where when you look at the hops that they've been working with for such a long period of time, they have learned to navigate this with great skill.
Yeah, efficiency, and it's very dialed in. And that's the thing now is you want this instant gratification and this dialed in flavor.
Well, I just wanted to revisit, you know, some of that conversation we had on the original episode, but let's get to another beer here from Blackstone.
Okay, so brewery number three that we're talking about today is Blackstone Brewery, which is Nashville's oldest craft brewery, which was founded by Ken Taylor and Stephanie Wines. May she rest in peace.
Yep.
So this started in 1994, and they have still continued to receive many awards for many beers over the years. I mean, we're lucky to have this here in our backyard.
It's crazy. You know, we have one brewery that's probably garnered more, you know, GABF medals in probably a 5-state region, you know, just all by themselves. And if you took everybody else combined, you know. Yeah, it's really crazy.
Well, but, just off one beer, too.
Yeah, really.
Just rock solid beers.
Yeah, I mean, St. Charles Porter is just, you know, definitely not going to get any better than that.
But I remember when the Atom Bomb came out and how it was like a revelation. Like, oh my gosh. Nashville's competing in the national
definitely,
you know, platform.
Stretching the bounds of what Blackstone did.
Yeah.
They were the classic 90s brew pub. So you can think of every style they had was a brew pub style.
This was not in their wheelhouse at all.
This surprised everybody in this town because it's a solid IPA, old school classic West Coast.
Yeah. I mean, this is an explosion of Centennial, Cascade, Chinook, and Simcoe, and, you know, big in your face, coming in at only 7.3% ABV. I mean, in the scheme of things,
this has got to be swinging up there in terms of IBUs, you know, definitely in that, you know, 90, 100 range.
This is only 76.
I was going to say 70.
I can't believe that. All right. Well, it's tasting
just
a
really good use of the hops. And for those of you who have never had this, we've talked about Highline, we've talked about resin, somewhere in between. So if you can picture 100%. That, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Got that nice upfront sharp pine kind of earthiness and then a nice bitter finish, but it doesn't blow you up.
Mm-hmm. I would say the star of the show here is the Centennial. I really think that's both the predominant hot profile, and I think it's also the glue in between, you know, all of these pieces.
Such
really
a beautiful hot for these beers.
Yeah. It's not, you know, it's a well-made base beer, and I really like how this has great balance and finishes out. You know, it really has just good balance all the way from, you know, beginning to end.
Well, you can tell from the color, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just light malts. There's a little bit of, you know, kind of caramel or something going on in there.
Yeah. This one has a bit of a kind of a red tinge to it. You know,
it does.
I think.
Yeah, it does. But it still holds up. And this, we're going to rate it 4.
Cool.
Now, the flip side of that, Blackstone has released what they call Little Jack, which is a 4.1%, 35 IBU, and it's got a lot of Centennial hops, but this is their downgraded version.
Of Hop Jack.
Yeah, of Hop Jack.
Which is their, kind of their, that's more than Atom Bomb, I would say. Hop Jack is kind of their flagship IPA. Another really solid one, but Little Jack is sort of the I think their venture into the low-cal session IPA game.
That's a good point, though, because the Hop Jack does come across differently than the Atom Bomb. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I've had it, but I do remember it was also a big old-school IPA, but I don't know. Was it more dank?
It was more dank.
More resin
than
the Atom Bomb.
Than the Atom Bomb.
And so
the Atom Bomb was a little bit more balanced in terms of hop flavor.
And you can actually still get Hop Jack as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So Little Jack's not Not bad, though. It's, you know, like all low-cal, low ABV IPAs, it's just hard to make a hoppy, bitter beer that's going to balance out the low amount of malt you're going to need to get that kind of ABV.
Yeah.
But you're still getting a decent amount of, like, hop flavor, you know, for it being such a lower ABV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's not overdone. You know,
oh no,
and it's
4.1. So it is a little thin, but that's to be expected with a 4% beer.
Sure, sure.
It's definitely lighter. You're not gonna get a lot of caramel malt out of this. It's a lighter grain bill, but the hops still work. You still know you're drinking a bitter beer.
Yeah,
and if that's what you're looking for, if the first part of your beer shopping experience is I want low-cal or something, but I want an IPA, you're not going to find much better.
Not a lot of options.
No, and you're still going to get some hop bitterness out of this.
I mean, it's a hard beer to make. I mean, you think Lagunitas had one that was like under 100 calories. It was supposed to be a hoppy beer. I know Founders All Day is kind of thrown into this category, although it's a little bit bigger. It's hard to make a light, low-cal beer with bitterness and make it work. But they've done a good job with this one.
It's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, I really remember what was going on quite a bit when both these beers came around, and the discussion that, you know, Ken was having with their distributor was that they were moving to the point of merchandising a lot of their beer in grocery stores for the very first time. And it was moving them from a brew pub model, and where they were pretty much very localized, you know, distribution with liquor stores. And they really had to create a series of beers that were going to appear to a much bigger audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was, you know, part of what they decided to do. There was, strawberry that came out about this strawberry picnic that came out around the same time that Little Jack did. And part of what they were dealing, again, was they were trying to appeal to a much broader, you know, palate around
this. Well, when you're going into the grocery store, you know, it's not like moving into a craft beer store or, you know, something like that. It's a completely different audience. I mean, everybody, we all buy groceries, but not everybody goes into a craft beer store.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so far to say that, you know, Little Jack is just an incredibly watered down version of anything. If anything, I just feel like they just backed off, you know, on both alcohol and the hop profile.
Oh, absolutely.
You
know,
Little
Jack, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to rate this one a 3.
I think that's the trap a lot of people fall into, though, is they'll take a big beer and just water it down. I don't think these guys did that.
No, I don't think that happened at all.
Now, we have a couple minutes left, so let's talk about a couple of other beers that we have from the breweries that we have talked about. So, in terms of Cigar City, you know, we have talked about big hop bombs. Well, let's talk about Fancy Papers for a minute. This one is 6.5% ABV, 60 IPUs, and this is using Strata, Sabro, and Idaho 7, which are newer hops in the lexicon.
Very creamy.
Yeah. Creamy. It's everything you think you're going to get in a hazy, but it's nothing about it as offensive. It's like an everyday hazy.
This is not bitter.
It's bitter enough to me that it's not one of the sweetie kind of little juicy bombs.
Yeah.
But I like it because it's a little different than the traditional, you know, like New England IPA.
100%.
We're going to rate this one a 4.
Yep.
Now, quickly, we will talk about 6 points fancy or party favor.
Not a fan.
This one's not doing it.
No.
And I think maybe it's coming right off of that.
It's that, that lactose.
That's what it is.
Well, Party Favors is considered a double New England IPA. This is coming in at 8.4%.
They should have stopped it.
Okay. So for them, IPA is the rule.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll rate this one.
We're going to rate this one a 2. And then last but not least, we're going to talk about Blackstone's Session Player.
which is a great session IPA as far as they go. We talked about low calorie, low ABV. It's hard to do well, but this was a good one.
Yeah. We'll give it a solid 3.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. This has been great.
It was good to come back and revisit, you know, IPAs, you know, in a then and now discussion.
So. Make beer better, bitter again, please.
Yeah, almost, right? Well, if you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
Tap that subscribe button, please. The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, or Uncle Larry, your favorite crazy uncle, play podcast Sip, Suds, and Smokes.
Don't ask Uncle Larry to tap it, though.
We love your feedback, and you can reach us online anytime at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com.
Our daily tasting notes flow out on Twitter every day at Sip, Suds, Smokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands of other fans on those social media platforms.
Do us a favor and take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. 5 stars. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well.
Good of luck, Kendall. Thanks for being here.
It was a pleasure. I love a good IPA.
Please tell us about your blog.
My beautiful wife and I blog about the good news of good beer at beermakes3.com. Instagram, too.
Good of boy, Dave. Mike.
Oh, dang.
Really? Did you do that just like right there?
I just went there.
You want to do it at the same time, Dave?
No.
Okay. Well, come back and join us for another exciting episode of Sip, Suds, and Smokes. I'll ask you to keep on sipping.
Good boy, Dave.
I wasn't listening. I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, that was always true.
Check me out on Instagram at Good Boy Dave.
This is Good About Juliana. Thanks for joining us. Keep on chuggling. Remember the past and move forward.
Stay away from lactose.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see you all next time.